Southern Fraud True Crime covers cases that may not be suitable for young listeners, and there may also be some explicit language used. Listener discretion is advised. Imagine that you're lying in bed, maybe in that twilight place between waking and dreams. You feel a small sting, but it was quick and no worse than a mosquito bite, so you keep drifting. Now you're starting to feel funny. Within a minute, your arms and legs have become weak, and you're having trouble breathing. Has panic started setting in, or is this a dream? In another minute or two, you won't be able to stand up. You won't be able to speak or cry out. You are trapped in your body and yet fully aware of what is going on around you. In just a couple more minutes, you will stop breathing altogether. Now the panic has set in. Is there someone there with you? Are they comforting you? Are they taunting you? Or are they just sitting there watching you suffer? Who is it? Is this your husband? Your wife? Your lover? The person you trust with your children? As you slip into unconsciousness, you now know that the person you loved and trusted most has just taken your life. These are believed to be the last moments of Jimmy Michael's life, after his wife injected him with a paralytic drug. It took him 13 minutes to lose consciousness and die. Welcome to episode 17, Cold Cold Heart, the story of Shelley Michael. In my last episode, we talked about a girl from a terrible background who committed a heinous and shocking murder. We might find her pitiful childhood to be a mitigating factor for her crime, but ultimately it didn't matter. She was given the harshest punishment. Her execution has not yet been scheduled, but it will be soon. On today's episode, our killer came from a completely different background. Shelley Michael, former cheerleader and nurse practitioner turned murderess, is the antithesis of Krista Pike. She was brought up with advantages. She was ambitious. And she killed for the other oldest reason, money. And while the murder of her husband, Jimmy Michael, was not as gruesome as that of Krista's victim, it was torture nonetheless. When the judge sentenced her, he listed all the words he heard associated with Shelley Michael. Evil, mean, demented, and diabolical. But he honed in on one word, probably the best descriptor. Cold. He said, "I don't know why that hits me, but that's what hits me. It's just cold." I think throughout this episode, and the next, you'll see why he was right. Why coldness is probably best used to describe Shelley Michael. Shelley was 33 years old when she killed her husband on November 29, 2005, in Morgantown, West Virginia. Let's take a step back and see how she got to that day. West Virginia is located entirely within the Appalachian region, and the state is almost entirely mountainous, giving it the nickname the Mountain State, and the motto, Montani Semper Liberi, or Mountaineers Are Always Free. The highest one is Spruce Knob, which is 4,863 feet above sea level, or 1,482 meters. It became a state when delegates from Unionist counties of northwestern Virginia decided to break away from Virginia, although there were many secessionist counties in that area as well. West Virginia was admitted to the Union on June 20, 1863, and was a key border state during the Civil War. West Virginia is the only state to form by separating from a Confederate state. While a portion of its residents did hold slaves, most of them were yeoman farmers, and they wrote the gradual abolishment of slavery into the new state's constitution. It's the southernmost northern state, and the northernmost southern state. West Virginia's history is steeped in its beautiful mountainous terrain, river valleys, and rich natural resources. These have always been driving factors in its economy and the lifestyles of its residents, who tend to live in small, relatively isolated communities in the mountain valleys, much like Clarksburg, where Shelley Michael was born. The city of Morgantown is the county seat of Monongahela County. Located along the Monongahela River and close to the Pennsylvania border in the north-central part of West Virginia, it's a college town, home to West Virginia University, with about 32,000 permanent residents. Michelle Lynette Gutz, nicknamed Shelley, was raised in nearby Clarksburg. She grew up in a happy and relatively prosperous household, her parents owning a refrigeration equipment company. They were strict parents, and Shelley sometimes bristled at the rules, but she was an excellent student and mostly appeared to be a well-behaved child. She would later write that at age 9, she was molested by an unnamed family member. But she did not tell anyone at the time, maintaining the happy and well-adjusted appearance she'd always had. In contrast with her sister Jennifer, who was the opposite. Shy, overweight, she may have envied her older sister and definitely grew up in her shadow. Shelley wasn't all perfect, though. She bucked at curfews, drank at 14, and was caught shoplifting at a local mall, though she was never prosecuted. Most of these things were just swept under the rug. Shelley excelled academically and threw herself into cheerleading with her mother Kathy's enthusiastic support. Cheerleading became her life. When she started junior high at age 13, one of the requirements for the cheerleading squad was to be able to perform a backflip. Shelley spent weeks practicing until she perfected it and easily made the squad. She was a straight-A student and cheerleader in high school as well, and like most kids in the area, she dreamed of attending West Virginia University. She graduated high school as salutatorian and was voted most likely to succeed, so she was accepted to WVU easily. She started college in 1990 and won a coveted spot on their cheerleading squad. She thrilled at performing her signature backflips across the WVU field, relishing in the attention and applause. West Virginia Mountaineers are the pride of the entire state. From small towns to the most remote mountain valleys, kids dream of being part of the excitement in Morgantown. The old golden blue and the unique Mountaineer logo are all over the small town. In February of 1992, Shelley started dating fellow student Bruce Adkins and almost immediately got pregnant. He didn't want marriage, and even her strict parents thought it was a bad idea, so Shelley had the baby alone. She had a little boy named Alec, and her mother made the drive to Morgantown every week to babysit so Shelley could go right back to school. Bruce also did still help with the baby at this point, but I couldn't find much else about him after they broke up. He did eventually offer to marry her, but she refused. He only asked out of jealousy. She was in love with a new man, Rob Angus. He was another WVU student she had met through friends. Rob had formed a tight bond with Alec, and this meant a lot to Shelley. She was candid later, saying she didn't really love him, but thought it was the best thing for her son. But it wasn't all easy. The September after they got engaged, she became pregnant again. But she had an abortion in Pittsburgh, later blaming Rob, saying he told her it wasn't a good time to have a baby. That same fall, Shelley went to the football tournament in Philadelphia. At an after party, she flirted with one of the trainers she thought was cute, and she had a lot to drink. She later described what happened uncertainly, but it sounds like it was acquaintance rape. She remembered feeling humiliated and filthy, but didn't remember if she consented. And she said it was the end of her cheerleading career at WVU. Though her relationship with Rob had become strained, Shelley carried on with wedding plans. Even her sister urged her to call it off or postpone, but she refused. In July of 1995, she married Rob Angus in the Catholic Church in Clarksburg. Rob worked for Parks and Rec in Morgantown as a caretaker, and they provided the young family with a small home. They settled into married life, but Shelley stayed in school. Not long after the wedding, Bruce Adkins suggested that Rob adopt his son. This was better for everyone involved, and Alec really did adore his stepdad. But Shelley claims the marriage quickly disintegrated into anger and violence. She did say the physical violence was on both sides, with her sister pointing out that Rob really knew how to push her buttons. And Rob never comments on this aspect of their marriage later. Regardless of the trouble, at Christmas, Shelley had become pregnant again. Then later, when she was 39 weeks pregnant, she was caught shoplifting. She swears it was a mistake. This was in September, and it was a Halloween costume for Alec that she put in her bag and said she meant to pay for. But she was found guilty and given probation, giving birth to baby girl Kylie just weeks later on October 3rd. There are some other worrying aspects to the Angus marriage, and Shelley in particular. Some might find it odd that she left her 6-month-old baby and 4-year-old son with her husband and went to Myrtle Beach with friends for spring break, just like any other college student. Except she wasn't like the other college girls. She was married, with 2 children. But Shelley would rarely find children or spouses an impediment to what she wanted. She always got her way. After 7 years, she did finally graduate from WVU with a bachelor's degree in nursing. She was offered a job at Ruby Memorial Hospital in the pediatric intensive care unit, making $28 an hour. That's a good living by today's standards, which would be almost $44 an hour, over $90,000 a year in 2018 money. But $58,000 a year in 1998 wasn't too shabby either. And Shelley claimed to love her job. In interviews, she speaks of how she always wanted to work with children and loved taking care of babies. But co-workers on the pediatric unit thought she was a flirt and a show-off. Shelley never got over being a cheerleader and was notorious for doing high kicks or jumps while walking the corridors of Ruby, always looking for attention and trying to impress her colleagues. One of these colleagues was Stephanie Michael, a respiratory therapist who found Shelley's antics eye-roll-worthy, but didn't really have any trouble with her. Shelley met Stephanie's husband, Jimmy Michael, who worked on the same unit. After she had been there about a year, she was on the same weekend shifts as Jimmy, who was also a respiratory therapist. The pair developed a friendship, and Shelley would later say an instant attraction to each other. James Andrew Michael, known as Jimmy, was born in Cumberland, Maryland, just 3 weeks after Shelley in 1972. His father, Denny, was a Baptist preacher, just like his grandfather and his uncle, Larry. Denny married his high school sweetheart, Ruth, and 3 years later, their first son, Steve, was born. Jimmy was just 3 years younger than his brother. Much like Shelley and her sister, Jennifer, Steve and Jimmy were polar opposites. Steve was athletic and tall, but not really into school. Jimmy was very academic, short, and overweight. There was one thing Jimmy was good at that Steve wasn't, though, and that was hunting. He loved hunting and fishing with his dad. Every Thanksgiving, the first day of hunting season, they would bond in the woods. Denny never hunted anything he didn't eat and taught Jimmy the same. When Jimmy was in elementary school, he sat next to a little girl named Carrie Whitaker. Their parents had grown up together, and Jimmy and Carrie became really close friends, a brother-sister relationship that would last all his life. They looked out for each other, and she would continue looking out for Jimmy even after his death. In high school, friends would say he was self-conscious and yet good-natured about his weight, not minding the nickname Chunk he got when he made the football team. He loved football, and when the coach told him he had to lose weight because he was too accident-prone, he made the effort and did drop the weight. He was a popular kid, and his parents would often come home to find Jimmy and 20 of his friends in their pool. Even though he was into football and popular, Jimmy was still also an academic overachiever and an ambitious student. He wanted to go to medical school. He wanted to help children. But unlike his future wife, he really meant it. He and Carrie graduated together, and as a gift, she gave him a scrapbook of their school memories. They both left for college and often joked about who would get their doctorate first. Jimmy's parents urged him to attend Allegheny College in Cumberland because they worried he was still a bit immature to go too far away for school. He did well there and became close friends with a roommate named Reggie Hours. Reggie would later say that he used to tease Jimmy for his fascination with cheerleaders and skinny girls in general. Jimmy, the kid who had always battled his weight, was fixated on the perfect cheerleader type, to the point that Reggie would come home and find him watching cheerleading competitions on ESPN. Jimmy graduated with an associate's degree in respiratory therapy in 1992 and enrolled in West Virginia University, majoring in chemistry that same year. He and Reggie Hours both moved to Morgantown, finding jobs at Ruby Memorial. Carrie Whitaker was already at WVU studying psychology and suggested they move in with her and her boyfriend and later husband, Seth. Jimmy soon met a pretty, petite, dark-haired respiratory nurse named Stephanie, who was about 5 years older than him on his first day at Ruby Memorial. She remembers thinking he was a big old teddy bear. He was a boisterous extrovert to her shy introvert. While he still battled his weight problem, Stephanie was the ideal skinny girl he'd always fantasized about. Jimmy and Stephanie quickly became a couple, and he settled in nicely at Ruby Memorial. His endearing bedside manner made him a popular employee and co-worker, and he loved working with children. He and Stephanie became engaged in 1993, a little surprising to friends and family because it was moving so quickly. In hindsight, Jimmy really wanted to get married. He wanted to settle down, and he thought he'd found his ideal woman in Stephanie. She got pregnant that June, and they were married a few weeks later. The following February, Stephanie gave birth to their son, Drew. Jimmy delighted in fatherhood, and the young couple seemed happy, but there were problems. They were discovering they didn't have as much in common as they once thought. And there was even more pressure put on Jimmy, because the couple lived in a house owned by Stephanie's parents. He spent years working double shifts, and saving for a down payment for a home of their own, and also for medical school. He graduated from WVU, and then found out that Stephanie had run up thousands of dollars in credit card debt. His dreams of medical school were dashed. By the fall of 1996, Stephanie was pregnant again, and the couple were constantly fighting. She swore out a complaint with the police, accusing Jimmy of pinching her arm during an argument. The fights continued even with their daughter Jacy's birth the following March. As much as they loved their new daughter, she couldn't save their marriage. They separated when she was 5 months old, and Jimmy finally bought a house of his own so his kids could spend the night. Denny and Ruth counseled their son to work out his differences with his wife. They didn't believe in divorce. The couple did reconcile in June of 1998, renewing their vows and moving in together at Jimmy's new house. But Stephanie's parents did not approve of the reconciliation and quit speaking to their daughter. Jimmy started working a lot of night shifts at Ruby Memorial and started getting close to Nurse Shelley Angus. At this time, I'm going to pause so we can hear a word from our sponsors. Shelley would later say they had a lot in common, both with two small kids and failing marriages. But many friends and co-workers believe that Shelley pursued him relentlessly. His friend and co-worker Reggie Hours said that he knew from the beginning that Shelley could sense Jimmy was an ambitious man and a hard worker who was meant to be a success. He said she played up to his weaknesses, flirting, complimenting, and she certainly played up the cheerleader part of her life as well. It was Jimmy's dream come true. Through all of this, Stephanie still worked at the same hospital, sometimes sharing shifts with Shelley Angus. Shelley often complained about her house, provided by the Parks and Recs department where her husband worked. She wanted something nicer. Stephanie later regretted mentioning how Jimmy had bought a new house in a nice neighborhood. By Christmas of 1998, Jimmy and Shelley were having a full-blown affair. His friend Reggie suspected that Shelley was trying to woo his friend, but he didn't believe it had gone that far. Stephanie figured it out when Shelley called the house one night, hanging up when she answered. But Stephanie wrote down the number that showed up. She later asked around at work if anyone recognized the number and found out it was Shelley Angus's. But she didn't confront her husband. She said, "I just sat back and let it all unfold." By now, all of Ruby Memorial and most of Morgantown were gossiping about the affair. But Jimmy continued to deny it to Stephanie. They had many heated arguments, and Jimmy did have a temper. Stephanie maintains he never hit her, but he was one to throw things, punch walls, and right before New Year's Eve, he threatened to physically throw her out of the house, and she filed her third complaint with the police. She said he threatened to kill her. Stephanie soon served Jimmy with divorce papers while at work. His parents were disappointed, and Denny encouraged his son to try and work it out with Stephanie, but he later admitted that they believed the marriage was doomed with or without Shelley. She probably just sped things up. Jimmy and Stephanie had rushed into things and had never really had a great relationship. Shelley was just the final straw. Shelley walked out on Rob Angus in January of 1999. Ironically, years later, she would insist that their marriage ended because of a lack of trust, not because she was having an affair, but because Rob liked to watch porn. Both divorces were settled that spring. Shelley moved in right away with Jimmy. Stephanie would later remark bitterly, "Sure enough, she got my house." After she moved in, they had Jimmy's old friend Carrie and her husband Seth over for dinner. Carrie was now an educational psychologist, and she was disturbed by Shelley's treatment of Jimmy's son Drew. Carrie thought Shelley was overly harsh with Drew, and she said so to Jimmy, who blew her off. She was concerned, but she hoped this was just an adjustment to new living arrangements. That summer, Jimmy took Shelley to his parents' new house in Pennsylvania. The Michaels weren't really wealthy, but they did have a nice home on a big piece of land. Denny did construction and did a lot of the add-ons himself, as well as putting in a pool. Shelley was really impressed. Ruth later remembered something that she thought was odd at the time, but brushed it off. Shelley told her, "Why don't you just go ahead and give us our inheritance now?" But meanwhile, both Jimmy and Shelley were tied up in divorce court, working out finances and custody of their children. When the divorces were finally settled the next February, both had worked out joint custody. They arranged it where either side had all four children at once on the weekends, with the kids going to their respective mothers' homes on Mondays and Tuesdays. It was a yo-yo arrangement, but they did their best to make it work. But soon friends and family started noticing that Shelley would bully and pick on Jimmy's son Drew. And her son Alec also bullied Drew. Though as a kid, it wasn't that surprising. What is surprising is that Jimmy seemed to take it all in stride. The girls, Kylie and Jacy, hit it off like gangbusters. They thought the boys were just naturally competitive like brothers can be. But the boys were never close, and Drew's relationship to his soon-to-be stepmother only got worse. And don't forget, Shelley, Jimmy, and Stephanie still all worked together at Ruby Memorial. When Stephanie found out that Jimmy and Shelley were engaged right after their divorce was finalized, she was hurt. It was too soon. She may have known it was coming, and divorces are never easy, but I can't imagine having to work with the woman my husband left me for. And it's not like Shelley was gracious about it. She taunted Stephanie. Stephanie, now a single mom, was just trying to pay her bills and raise her kids. It wasn't enough that Shelley got her husband. She also felt the need to rub Stephanie's face in it, even threatening that they would eventually go back to court and she would get full custody of all the kids. Jimmy and Shelley married that May in the year 2000. A small Baptist wedding this time, and the bride and groom wrote their own vows. For all appearances, They were very much in love. But soon after the wedding, Shelley made Jimmy stop communicating with his ex-wife. All calls about the kids had to go through her. Stephanie couldn't even have his cell phone number. Essentially, Shelley was taking over Jimmy's life in many ways. Controlling the family's transition with their stepchildren was one step. She also suddenly became devout. She was raised Catholic, but wasn't really involved in the church before. Now she threw herself into Jimmy's faith, going to church every Sunday and taking extra classes. I'm sure many people would see this as a good thing. Usually it would be. But I suspect that of all the things in Jimmy's life that she could control, his deep faith was not one of them. So she decided to join in. She would make sure it was a family affair. Jimmy started coaching Alec and Drew's Little League football team at the end of that summer. And surprisingly, Rob Angus helped him. Working together with the kids, they had no problems. Over the years, I really think if Shelley could have stopped her controlling ways, the new blended families would have gotten along as well as she wanted the world to think they did. Jimmy coached the boys' football team for the next 5 years, and Shelley started coaching Kylie and JC's junior pro cheerleading squad. But there were definitely still tensions. In February of 2001, Stephanie filed another complaint on Jimmy. She accused him of trying to hit her with his car during a heated argument. Kylie and JC were in the car. Protection orders were filed, and Jimmy wound up taking a plea bargain of simple assault so he wouldn't have a criminal record. Stephanie later said she asked for the charges to be dropped as long as Jimmy took anger management classes. She did not hold grudges, and no matter what happened between them, I think she always cared about Jimmy and certainly respected him as father to her children. By early 2002, Shelley was pressuring Jimmy to buy a new house, complaining that their family had outgrown his old house. She also complained it was too far to commute for work, even though it was only about 5 miles outside of town. But what she really wanted was to live in the posh Suncrest neighborhood of Morgantown. She soon picked out a house on Killarney Drive. It was a 4-bedroom house that Jimmy worried was out of their budget. Shelley had recently dropped down to part-time. She had convinced Jimmy to pay for her going back to get her master's degree in nursing. She would become a nurse practitioner, making really good money, but for now, their decreased income was really pinching their finances. Jimmy tried to fight it out about buying a new house, but Shelley just wouldn't let it go. By May, they had moved in. The house was just a mile from Ruby Hospital, a tidbit that is important later. Jimmy and Shelley made friends with neighbors and others in their community. Many often remarked on Shelley's habit of wearing skimpy outfits. She reveled in her figure and liked showing it off. Point of contention with her more conservative husband. And even neighbors noticed how bad she treated Jimmy's son Drew. She was always picking on the kid, and it had to have been bad if even neighbors, not just close friends, noticed it. And friends and family alike did notice her controlling behavior. Family get-togethers always had to be at Shelley and Jimmy's. Jimmy often called his wife feisty, but later family would say that just meant Shelley got what Shelley wanted. She was a perfectionist, and she liked having the perfect-looking Brady Bunch family. School administrators saw her so much, they started assuming that she was Dracy and Drew's mother, too. Stephanie laughed it off when one asked her if she was Drew's aunt when she went to pick him up one time. But one day, they happened to meet at school at the same time, and Shelley started screaming at Drew to come with her. But for once, he didn't listen and ran to his mother. Stephanie later said one of the teachers saw it, and the real Shelley Michael became known around the school. But Shelley's perfect exterior was starting to tarnish. In July of 2003, she was suspended without pay for insubordination. She had taken a 2-week vacation without permission, after she was expressly told she couldn't. A few weeks later, her sister Jennifer, who was pregnant with her third child, came out as a lesbian. She left her husband and moved in with her lover Jamie. Jimmy felt it was against his faith and banned his children from seeing their aunt. Shelley later wrote of being disappointed and upset. Though there was tension, Shelley's parents had accepted Jennifer's choice. Shelley, however, did not. She sided with Jimmy. But months later, she did attend the baptism of the baby. Shelley evidently fumed during the service, glancing at Jamie often. She found out from her father that Jamie would be at the family dinner at a nearby restaurant afterwards, and she went berserk. She ran over to Jamie's car, pulled her out, and started punching her. Jimmy was able to pull her off Jamie and get her away. And this was how Jimmy's parents found out what was going on. Ruth later said the whole thing was a dark secret, which she couldn't really understand, as Shelley and Jennifer's parents had accepted it. Ruth probably understood more than anyone Jimmy's religious motives, but like many others, she thought Shelley's fervent objection was disingenuous. People at their church were now whispering about Shelley. It wasn't just the skimpy outfits, there were other rumors. But more importantly, she just came off like a fake person. She showed up for church, dressed up with her perfect-looking family, but everyone thought it was just an act. I find the whole episode with Jennifer's lover to be really strange. It's not that Shelley didn't love her sister, it just seemed out of character. I wonder if this wasn't part of her whole charade of being a devout Christian woman, that her sister's lover so offended her faith that she needed a public display like that. When honestly, no real Christian would have resorted to violence, especially not right outside of the church where their niece had just been baptized. Just a couple of weeks after this, Jimmy pulled aside his best friend from church, Jeremy Miller, and showed him a box that came in the mail. In the box was one of Shelley's sweaters, with a note that said, "Keep your whore wife away from my husband." Jimmy said, "Why does this lady send me this? Why does my wife deny it all?" He said he didn't think she was cheating, but Jeremy felt it was pretty obvious that Jimmy was just in denial. Despite Shelley's questionable work ethic, she did always stick it out in school. And in July of 2004, she received her pediatric nurse practitioner certificate. And despite her history at Ruby Memorial, they did offer her a full-time position. But in her interview, she firmly stated she didn't want to work full-time. She wanted to work 3 10-hour shifts a week. Her supervisor, the same man that had already had problems with her, insisted that no, it was a full-time position. She would have much more responsibility, and therefore accountability, and it was just not a part-time position. But Shelley was adamant, and the doctor finally relented and said they would give it a shot. That August, Stephanie married a pediatric nurse from Ruby Memorial named Dan Estelle. So now we have Shelley, her husband's ex-wife Stephanie, Stephanie's new husband Dan, and Jimmy's good friend Reggie, all still working at Ruby Memorial. And though Jimmy had taken a job at a pharmacy a couple of years earlier, he still picked up shifts at the hospital as well. This sounds more like an old episode of that soap opera General Hospital than real-life events. But it all really did happen. And what happened next, no one saw coming, despite all the red flags in Jimmy and Shelley's marriage. At this time, I'm going to pause so we can hear a word from our sponsors. By that winter, Shelley no longer wanted to have sex with Jimmy. And Jimmy was also frustrated at work. He had taken that pharmacy job 3 years earlier when he realized he would never be able to go to medical school. The job paid more, and he was promised he would become partner in the company. But after 3 years of waiting to be made partner, Jimmy decided to leave and start his own medical supply business. This took a good bit of startup capital. Jimmy, with the help of a banker friend, secured a personal loan of $60,000 and also a few partners. He retained 55% control in the company. He opened Mountaineer Home Medical in January of 2005. Jimmy threw himself into his new business. He was the first to arrive and the last to leave. His cell phone was always on him, and he was always on call. A medical supply business may not sound like the type that would require an on-call person, but they often did have to go replace crucial pieces of equipment in homes or hospitals. And his hard work was paying off. The company was doing well. But Shelley couldn't understand that no new company is going to start without personal sacrifices, and one of those was the income that Jimmy had been pulling in. Not only was he working all the time, his salary was nothing compared to what he had been making. Shelley was livid. Just like in every other aspect of his life, she started inserting herself in his business. She called meetings with his partners, pressuring and questioning her husband repeatedly. Jimmy was embarrassed, and this is when things really started to go downhill for the couple. But they trudged on, always trying to keep up appearances. The following February of 2005, Jimmy met with a life insurance salesman on the recommendation of his partners. It did seem smart to protect his company and his family now that he was on his own. Shelley was brought to the meeting and they decided on a $500,000 policy. They also took out a $200,000 policy on her because she also had $300,000 through her job at the hospital. At around the same time, Ruby Memorial had started construction on a new extension to the pediatric wing, and it was imperative that Shelley work full-time. The head doctor of the unit met with her and was again put off by her attitude. She did not want to work full-time. He complained to her nursing supervisor, and they agreed that when the wing opened, Shelley would have to go full-time. But Shelley made no bones about how much she hated her job and the hours. She wanted to work as little as possible, and she was angry that Jimmy's business wasn't paying enough yet. So Shelley sunk into a depression. Now she stopped trying to keep up perfect appearances for family and friends. When Father's Day came around, she did not invite both sides of the family as usual. Jimmy's parents found it odd that her family wasn't there, and she blamed it on Jimmy and said that he hadn't wanted them there. They knew him well enough to know that this was a lie, and they just didn't know what to think. However, even though Shelley didn't understand how these things work, Jimmy's business was taking off. By the 6-month mark, he was in the black, and often became emotional at meetings, saying that the Lord had blessed him. But things were still bad at home. People noticed Shelley's coldness towards him, and despite the business being a success, Jimmy himself was often depressed and upset. A couple of years earlier, they had befriended a couple named Bobby and Kelly Teets. This year, they had become even closer, with Kelly even transferring her daughter to Kylie's school. They often helped each other with carpooling, and Bobby Teets started helping Jimmy with coaching football. I think it's important to note here that through all of this, Jimmy was always the hard worker. He started his own company working insane hours, and yet he never let go of what he saw as his responsibilities as a father and Christian, like coaching his son's team and staying involved with all church functions, no matter how little personal time that left him. When Drew decided he no longer wanted to play football and wanted to try basketball, Jimmy, without giving up his coaching duties for football, signed up to coach for basketball. This time, he asked for help from his ex-wife's new husband, Dan Estelle. Dan agreed, and the man got along very well. As hard as Jimmy was working both professionally and in his personal life, Shelley was still looking for ways to work less. She was under a lot of pressure at work to accept the responsibility of full-time hours. So suddenly, she decided she wanted to have another baby. Jimmy had a vasectomy years ago, before they were even married, after JC was born. He had no interest in expanding their family further, much less having the reversal surgery. Shelley was adamant, and this caused many fights. Everyone that knew them felt that Shelley thought having another baby would mean she could stop working again. Shelley's work ethic is surprising to me. She had worked so hard to make it through college and then gain her master's degree even while having her children. And yet, professionally, she had a terrible reputation for taking too much time off and shirking responsibilities. This side of Shelley doesn't gel with the perfect facade she seemed to need to keep up. I think that's because at this point in her life, the facade was changing. She felt she should be the wife of a rich man and resented having to work. And around this time, Jimmy began questioning her fidelity again. She went to an Italian heritage festival with a friend and didn't return that night. When Jimmy asked her where she had been, she told him it was none of his business. She wasn't even trying that hard to hide what she was doing now. There had long been whispers about her faithfulness in Morgantown, and Jimmy had always quietly taken it in stride, but it was starting to get to him. In September of 2005, Shelley was suspended from work again for taking an unauthorized day off. The new extension at the hospital was about to open, and she wouldn't even commit to the hours that she was already working. Bobby and Kelly Teets worked for a company that made industrial uniforms. The company was going out of business and selling their machines. Bobby told Shelley and Jimmy that an embroidery machine was a good investment, and Jimmy initially agreed to back the company. Finally, Shelley was excited about something. They planned to buy the machine and work out of Jimmy and Shelley's basement. She threw herself into researching everything that they needed to get set up. Meanwhile, Bobby took a job in Jimmy's company. The couples became even closer with Bobby working with both of them. In October, Shelley went to Jimmy and accused Drew of serious misbehavior. It's unclear what she accused him of, but the little boy insisted he hadn't done anything wrong and called Shelley a liar. At that, Jimmy snapped and he beat Drew with his belt. It didn't take long for Jimmy to fully realize what he had done. He was beside himself. He called his church friend Jeremy, crying almost hysterically. The next Saturday, Drew had a soccer game, and Stephanie noticed bruising on his arm. She questioned her son, and he told her what Jimmy had done. When she confronted Jimmy, he immediately became emotional and apologetic. Stephanie, always one to forgive, decided to let it go. Jimmy truly was sorry, and she believed him. He came to her house to talk to Drew, and he asked his son to lift his shirt so he could see the bruising. Stephanie said that all the color drained from his face, and he fell to his knees, crying and begging forgiveness. At this point, Dan stepped in to talk to him. Dan was a very kind man, and he helped calm Jimmy down. He seemed to understand the pressure Jimmy was under and didn't want him punished either when it was clear that Jimmy felt so horrible. But he did push Jimmy about communicating with his ex-wife. Dan and Stephanie both thought that a lot of the animosity and problems were caused by Shelley's insistence that Stephanie only go through her about the kids. They decided then and there that this would stop. Shelley was now out of the equation, and Stephanie and Dan later said that their relationship improved so much. Jimmy seemed less stressed, and everyone just got along better. Jimmy may have been forgiven by his son and ex-wife, but a teacher at Drew's school had seen the bruising and called Child Protective Services. He met with CPS and agreed to counseling, and started working with a pastor from a local evangelical Methodist church. In the very first session, he confessed that he was having extreme marital issues and talked about Shelley's drinking. He didn't admit to suspecting of her cheating, though. He just said he wished that she would return to church and recommit to their marriage. The part about drinking really struck me as odd, because it's not mentioned anywhere that Shelley had a problem with alcohol. I think Jimmy needed to talk about how she was hurting him, but couldn't bear to bring up the cheating, so he just said drinking. I also really think he kept his head in the sand about it, not even wanting to admit it to himself. When I said before that Shelley had stopped trying to keep up the perfect facade, that included church. She no longer attended regularly, nor did she bring the children. This was obviously very hurtful to Jimmy, who had always been so committed to his faith. Many people who saw Jimmy that fall mentioned how depressed or distraught he seemed, though he did keep his reasons to himself. But the downward slide was noticeable to everyone. And Shelley kept pursuing the embroidery company. She was doing online research and signed herself and Bobby up for a seminar in Chicago. A couple of weeks later, Shelley was in a minor car accident. and then she fell down a few stairs. Both of these things put her out of work for 3 weeks, though she didn't actually have broken bones or any other serious injuries. I wonder if she didn't do these things on purpose, now trying the sick leave angle since she could no longer get out of full-time hours. Around this time, Stephanie had a new baby, and she noticed a real change in Shelley's attitude towards her. Gone was the resentment and jealousy. When Stephanie came to pick up JC and Drew, Shelley even begged to hold the new baby and was really friendly with her. Stephanie was hopeful that things were getting better. What she didn't know, and what no one knew yet, was that Stephanie was happy because a flirtation had sprung up between her and Bobby Teets. When she made reservations for her and Bobby to attend this embroidery seminar, she only booked one room. And they treated this trip as a lover's getaway. The cameras at the hotel caught them kissing and holding hands. Shelley later would say she felt guilty, but was just sucked in. But she didn't seem like that to Bobby, who was truly guilt-ridden, not just for his wife Kelly, but also for Jimmy, who had been so kind to him. Jimmy had given him a job and trusted him. And now, Jimmy began to act differently. People in his life noticed a change. He seemed to have come to a sort of peace. On Thanksgiving Day, he and Shelley attended a Mountaineers football game. She later said they just discussed how well the business was doing, and he told her he was leaving the following night to go home and hunt with his dad and cousin. He also told Bobby Teets that he would be out of town and needed Bobby to be on call. He called Stephanie and asked if he could take Drew with him, even though it was her Thanksgiving. She said no because she was going to a big family get-together with her new baby and wanted all of her children there. She said he was very understanding and they wished each other a happy holiday and hung up. It would be the last time she spoke with him. Jimmy left that Friday night, and as soon as he was gone, Shelley called Bobby and he came straight over. They had sex in Jimmy's bed, and then Bobby went home to his wife. Jimmy's dad and cousin later said that he seemed very upbeat on this hunting trip. He was extremely excited with how well his business was going, and for the first time in a long time, really seemed to be happy and looking forward to his future. He came back home Saturday night, and he and Shelley went to a Mountaineers basketball game with Bobby and Kelly. Bobby later said he felt awful, looking at his wife and his boss, and he resolved right then that things would end with Shelley. On Sunday, Jimmy went and worked a shift at Preston Hospital. He was still picking up shifts at hospitals for extra money. Seriously, the man never rested. After his shift, he drove back to his parents' house. He had promised his father they would go hunting again on Monday morning. So they rose at dawn on a miserable rainy day and hunted for a while. When they were done, he got back in his car and drove back to Morgantown because he had basketball practice. While he was driving, his friend Reggie called and asked Jimmy if he could go and set up a sleep apnea monitor for a newborn baby at Ruby Memorial. Jimmy promised he would be there first thing the next morning. At around 10 p.m., he called Bobby Teets and vaguely asked him his schedule for the next day, but Bobby said he didn't know yet. He said Jimmy brought up the embroidery business and mentioned that they would be seeing a lot of each other, and they left it at that. The conversation seems really odd, because though he was supportive of Shelley's business venture in spirit, he was no longer willing to foot the bill. She naturally assumed he would invest with the money from his business, but he had made it clear that he would not. Shelley went to his office behind his back on that Monday to use the fax machine and sent out an email to everyone in the company about his change of mind, saying that she understood if they wanted to back out, but that her and Jimmy would do it on their own. Again, this is really strange. It was never going to be a part of the Mountaineer business, just Jimmy's personal investment. But when he backed out, it's like she went there and emailed, fishing around for one of them to speak up and say they would invest. But she didn't get that response. I'm sure Jimmy's partners were baffled by the email, though they had grown accustomed to Shelley's overbearing behavior. Shelley then called Bobby and instructed him to bring his tax returns to her the next day at work. They were going to have to finance the embroidery business on their own. He agreed, and they hung up. After this call, No one really knows for sure what happened in the Michaels household that night. Okay, guys, that's it for this episode. We will finish up the story of Shelley Michael and the murder of Jimmy Michael in the next episode. I appreciate your patience. This one has been a doozy, and I cannot wait for you to hear the rest. Southern Fried True Crime is written and produced by me, Erica Kelly. The original graphic art is by Coley Horner, and Southern Fried's original music is by Rob Harrison of Gamma Radio. As always, if you enjoyed the show, tell a friend or rate and review on iTunes. I'm also on Stitcher and many other apps. If you're interested in supporting the show, come check out my Patreon page or my website, southernfriedtruecrime.com, where you can make a one-time donation by hitting the donate button. I also have a merchandise store open at whatamaneuver.net. If you have any comments, corrections, or suggestions, you can email me at southernfriedtruecrime@gmail.com. I love hearing from you guys, and I'm always looking for new cases, so please feel free to reach out. I'm also all over social media. Just search the show name in your favorite platform if you'd like to connect with me there. Until next time, thank you so much for listening. Y'all take care.